05 and 2005 UTC right after the in.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Peter Clotty in for Heidi Adams. On today's show, we are looking into the senseless violence that occurred recently in Nigeria's Ondo State, where gunmen mercilessly opened fire on parishioners inside a Catholic church. And here in the United States, where young, innocent lives were again lost to gun violence. The violence is drawing attention to governments who appear helpless in fighting random acts of violence. We have a lineup of informed guests to shed light on these growing acts of violence and what governments are doing to prevent them. Assailants wielding AK-47 rifles and explosives attacked the congregation at St. Francis Catholic Church in Owo in Nigeria's southwestern Ondo State during Pentecost Mass last Sunday, leaving behind a scene of carnage as they escaped. Authorities suspect the insurgent group Islamic State West Africa Province is responsible for the massacre in which 40 people were killed. In the first of two reports, correspondent Timothy Obiezu visited Owo and talked with the people who lost loved ones.
It's been days since the bloody shooting in Owo, southwest Nigeria. The streets are cold and unusually quiet. Some residents stand in groups, observing and discussing a little audibly. Nearly everyone here knows someone who has been affected. The anger is palpable. Anthony Olajide has just arrived over his hometown from his base in Edo State. His 74-year-old mother was shot in the chest and abdomen. She was brought here on Sunday, dead.
When I first got into the morgue, I couldn't hold myself. This is somebody I spoke to on Friday, 2 days before the incident. I couldn't imagine her life in that state.
From the mortuary, he visits the church and says his mom would normally sit here. A little away from that spot, he identifies a piece of cloth which belongs to her.
Only the dead, injured, and body parts have been removed from this auditorium. Clotted blood, pieces of clothes, bags, and shoes of the victims can be found all over the place. The motive behind the shooting is not yet known, but the survivors say what happened here is unimaginable.
National authorities said terror group the Islamic State West Africa Province carried out the attack and say about 40 people were killed and many more injured. But that figure is different from what some residents here believe. This group of Ohanaeze Ndibo in Owo is here to get approval to claim bodies of their members. They say up to 80 people were killed.
If I have to admit now, but it is something people have been dead now. And most of them, majority are Igbos. Majority are Igbos. So to give you the number of people that are dead, people are still dying up to now.
Most of the bodies of victims have been kept in a federal medical center in Owo and a Catholic hospital in the area. Authorities also plan to dedicate a park in memory of the victims.
This gate is the only way in and out of the church. Some survivors say the attackers escaped in a vehicle this direction, which is normally a very busy street, no forests, no hideouts, just people, their houses and businesses. And that raises serious concerns. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Owo, Ondo State, Nigeria.
A week later, residents in the town of Owo are still reeling from last Sunday's deadly shooting. Here again is Timothy Obiezu, who spoke to residents there that are trying to figure out how to protect their community.
Many churches here Sunday did not open for service. Those who held services registered a low turnout. Residents say the incident has been too difficult to forget or ignore. There's anger, fear, and uncertainty about where might be attacked next. I spoke to some relatives of the dead and survivors, and this is what they had to say.
What happened is very terrible. is myself. I came here when the thing happens, and I was very much whipped. I never crossed such a thing before, and I never see it. That's my first time. It's painful.
It's abominable act that these people came to church in a place of worship and kill. Their plan is to kill everybody. And they went away without being caught. It is a shame to this country. They should work on security.
So, immediately I'm going to go to church that very day of Sunday.
Immediately after it happened, I went to the church. I didn't even know she died on the altar. I searched all the corpses there, and there were many of them. Later, I met my brother at the hospital, and he said our mom's body was in church.
The reason behind the attack is still not clear, but Nigerian authorities have blamed ISIS affiliate, the Islamic State of West African Province, ISWAP, for the attack and said 40 people died while around 87 others were injured. ISWAP, an offshoot of Boko Haram, has been active in the Chad Basin for many years, fighting an insurgency against the states of Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. Inundo State authorities have been flying the Nigerian national flag at half-mast to remember the victims. Also, Nigeria's Democracy Day, marked every year on June 12th, was cancelled here. State authorities said the reason was to allow residents mourn the victims of the attack. Meanwhile, the Catholic diocese has said a mass burial for the victims will hold on Friday. State and national authorities are expected to attend. Nigerian authorities have been struggling to contain a wave of violence and terror across its northeastern and northwestern states for many years, but this is the first time an attack like this in southwestern region of the country will be linked to a terror group. The region was never one of the areas of concern until now. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Owo, Ondo State, Nigeria.
Thanks, Timothy, for that report. For insight into the growing threats by extremist groups who appear to have access to guns acquired illegally in most cases, we are joined by Dr. Yetunde Omede, a professor of global affairs and political affairs at Farmingdale State College. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Omede. How are you?
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Right, thank you. Now, Dr. Omede, a lot of people are outraged by this latest attack on these parishioners. What are your thoughts?
Rightfully so. I think it has been one too many. When we think of the current state of the security in Nigeria, this is just another unfortunate and disheartening incident. We have blasphemy killings that happened not too long, weeks ago, prior to this incident that happened in Owo. And so many people are asking, on the ground, are we safe? Are we safe in a place of worship? Are we safe in school? Are we safe in our day-to-day lives? And clearly the answer is no. The government needs to do more in terms of beefing up security, in terms of ensuring that those who wield terrorist attacks do not go scot-free, that they are brought to book and that they are brought to justice. And there has been too many failed attempts and too many examples of atrocities like this happening, and weeks go on, and still no one has been apprehended. And again, that also leads to telling the story of insecurity in Nigeria, which has been a growing problem for some time.
Well, Dr. Omede, President Muhammadu Buhari condemned this latest attack, and he said all government resources will be put at the will be gathered for the security agencies, including the police and the army, to look into this latest development, investigate and apprehend the perpetrators. Your reaction to the reaction from the government following this latest attack?
I mean, the government does, of course, have to issue a statement, right? They do have to try to say something that will put the tension at rest and try to reassure the public of safety measures. However, this has gone past just a statement of condemnation. It has gone past just a statement of remorse and prayers. At this point, it needs to also lead to action and also prevention, right? A place that has security, where citizens are treated in the utmost priority. I think terrorist attacks and terrorists in general will think twice about what are the repercussions or what are the consequences if I carry out such is such act able to even happen in this space? Do I am I in enough proximity to even carry out these actions? And time and time again, especially even in schools where school-aged children have been, you know, going to school to receive an education, they are not even safe. Students in hostels, parents who have paid and send their money to, you know, pay tuitions and send their children to school hoping that cases of institutions of education, that they will be monitored and that they will be kept safe, has also failed them. And so now we're seeing churches. This has been happening and reoccurring. This is not the first incident that has happened where an attack has been leveled against a church and people have been killed within the church. This is not the first incident of blasphemy killing. This is not the first incident of children being kidnapped on school premises. This is not the first incident where terrorists have wielded their actions against innocent lives and have went scot-free. So unfortunately, we have passed the state where speeches of condemnation and speeches of trying to reassure the public when the examples are contrary to that.
Well, Dr. Mede, this followed less than a month when the unknown gunmen attacked the train, kidnapped quite a number of people. But let's see what the people at Owo think should be done to protect the community.
They'll be pronounced as terrorists.
How could the shooters come here and carry out such an attack? If we capture them, we will not kill them, but only interrogate them to know why they did it and who sent them.
There will be chaos, so they should return our guns that they took from us. If they don't, we will destroy everything. What do they expect us to defend ourselves with if they come again? We do not care who dies. We will destroy everything. I'm ready to die.
We are not happy. We want the government to address this issue of security. This is too much. They must not be allowed to go scot-free, because if that happens, we will know that we don't have a government in Nigeria.
Well, Dr. Mede, your thoughts on the reaction of what the people in Owo think should be done by the government to protect life and property?
Look, how they feel, and I think the whole world really sort of commiserates with them because it's such a heinous act. It's something that is so disheartening that I think has sort of shocked the world when they read the reports, when people saw the videos and could not believe that even in a peaceful town like Owo, a peaceful place, that something like this would be happening. The governor, Governor Akeredolu of Owo, basically said that he doesn't think this is an ethno-religious attack. He believes that ISWAP is just doing this to gain some form of attention for whatever their motives may be. The motives are still not yet clear in terms of why they decided to pick this place, why they decided to do this course of action. What we know with terrorist organizations and with terrorist groups and cells, they want to do shocking, right? They want to pick places that will garner the most attention. They want to create terrorist acts where they would receive nationwide or global attention, which further gives them the attention that they're seeking. However, we don't know the motive, right? And the motive is not necessarily clear. However, the actions and the consequences and the pain that has been left within the state has been clear and has been seen by hundreds and thousands of people around the world. And the way people feel, they have a right to feel that way, because when the government and the security apparatus at hand can no longer protect the lives of citizens, can no longer protect private property, you will now see innocent civilians picking up arms, innocent civilians trying to figure out how do they also protect themselves, because they don't have the protection that the government is supposed to provide for them. And that, again, is a very dicey situation, because you don't want civilians taking actions into their hands. You don't want civilians carrying out jungle justice. You don't want them mistakenly apprehending individuals, assuming and making assumptions that this individual may be a terrorist or this individual may be a killer or so forth, and it may not necessarily be true. So you also have the issue of innocent people, civilians also dying by the hands of other civilians who are carrying out jungle justice, and it's not necessarily their responsibility to do so. But a problem like this, the vacuum that it creates is that people start taking law into their own hands. And well, that is something the government needs to look into.
Well, Dr. Mehdi, insecurity was mostly consigned to part of the north in Nigeria for years. It appears it is coming gradually towards the southern part of the country. What is causing this?
The movement, right? Migration. And also the understanding that if there's a weakened security apparatus within Nigeria, within the interiors of Nigeria, terrorist organizations are going to move. And they're going to move closer and closer and spread out and find different cells where they can carry out their motives. And so we have particularly seen it in northern Nigeria. But of course, it's going to move with various factions. It's going to move with various issues. We also see it in the South. We see it also with attacks in the Igbo land. We also see it coming towards, even in Lagos, we have some issues where we have seen that, you know, terrorist activity and also just increased crime is happening. And so that is something that's going to happen when there is no security, when there is no protection, when we don't see examples of enforcement going on. All of that is going to spread, and unfortunately, we're going to see it in many areas that we thought we would not see such action.
Thank you very much. It's time for a break, but when we come back, we are going to look at the gun violence debate in the United States. Stay with us.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
And thank you very much, Dr. Yetunde Omede, for joining us. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution protects the right of the people to keep and bear arms. This is a controversial amendment, has been open to constant interpretation of its intent and scope, and is at the heart of political debate between Democrats and Republicans. U.S. lawmakers are struggling to reach a deal on gun control measures in the wake of last month's mass shooting that left 21 students and two teachers dead at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. At VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Democrats rallied to keep attention focused on the issue while hearing from some of the Uvalde survivors.
2 weeks after 19 children and two teachers were killed in a mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, U.S. lawmakers heard from parents of the victims.
I left my daughter at that school, and that decision will haunt me for the rest of my life.
And from a survivor inside the school.
He shot my friend that was next to me, and I thought he was going to come back to the room, so I grabbed the blood. And put it all over me.
House Democrats rallied at a memorial for gun violence victims earlier this week before narrowly passing a package of gun control measures.
In 2019, the United States suffered 17 times more gun deaths than the next highest G7 country. We stand alone in mass shootings. Other countries pass sensible gun safety laws and protect their children. And no other country comes close to the number of school shootings we have.
But supporters of the constitutional right to bear arms argue that the commonly proposed gun control laws, such as limits on gun magazines, would not make a difference.
Magazines are commonly possessed by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes. The few rigorous studies on their prohibition have found that the evidence for their success at lowering rates of gun violence is inconclusive at best. The context in which mass public shootings occur renders magazine limits effectively useless at saving lives.
Gun control is one of the impassioned debates in American life. Polls show the majority of Americans support most of these measures, but Republican lawmakers argue that boosting school security and gun safety education will save more lives.
There's an important place for law-abiding gun owners to serve in protecting themselves, their families, and their communities from violence. Our Second Amendment is an important tool in securing our individual rights to self-defense.
With narrow control of the U.S. Senate, Democrats will have to reach a deal with Republicans, who strongly support the National Rifle Association and other gun rights groups, to pass those changes into law.
It's an overwhelming consensus in this caucus, among the broad panoply of gun groups, gun safety groups, and among the American people. Get something done. Get something real done, even if it's not everything that many of us would wish for.
That possible deal in the Senate could include raising from 18 to 21 the minimum age to own an AR-15-style assault rifle, the same weapon that was used by the 18-year-old gunman in Uvalde, Texas. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Scott Stearns, VOA's bureau chief for the Western U.S., went to Uvalde soon after the deadly shooting. And he joins us now to provide more insight into what happened and why changing gun laws remains such a controversial issue. Hello, Scott.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Scott. So tell me, you were in Uvalde, Texas. What was the reaction there following this latest mass shooting in the U.S.?
Uvalde is a rural area where I can only imagine the parents who dropped their children off at school at Robb Elementary that day could not have imagined what would have happened. You saw it in some of the survivor testimony in Catherine's piece. Real shock, not that Americans in settings where violence is more common have become inured to that, but it certainly is a surprise in that a rural area, especially because the gunman himself was from the area and had been attending the local high school.
So, Scott, why is it so important for Americans to arm themselves or own guns?
So you have been talking, and Catherine was talking a bit in her package, about the Second Amendment. And the language of the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is what has been a stumbling block to gun reform, if you're someone who believes that gun laws should be reformed, and a foundation for blocking those reforms, if you're someone who believes in the primacy of owning guns in the United States. The text of that amendment, and it's very short, says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, the U.S. Constitution was written at a time when Americans in this young country were battling for their independence, and history has shown that the ability of those colonists to have their own guns proved instrumental in standing up to the British Army. That was a long time ago. But you hear that same, you hear those same thoughts after the Uvalde shooting. I then went on to Houston for the convention of the National Rifle Association, where many people spoke of that same need, that it's not simply the ability to own a weapon that should be protected in the United States in the view of many American gun owners, but almost their obligation, that unless Americans are allowed to own guns in the minds of many members of the National Rifle Association, their freedoms, the liberties that all Americans enjoy, would be endangered by the government or some other outside influence that could come and take away all those liberties. So it's not just one liberty in this mindset. It is the liberty that protects all others.
Well, Scott, you know, the claim is that there are more guns in America than people. But South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem had this to say about the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms.
The Second Amendment is about deterrence. It's about ensuring government respects the rights and the liberty of citizens. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Those 27 words are freedom's last line of defense. The founders understood deeply that without an armed citizenry, authentic freedom could not and would not survive.
Well, Scott, you have been to many parts of Africa, and you've heard people usually ask you, why is it that America has been unable to stop mass shootings or even prevent people who are so mentally ill from acquiring weapons without any hindrances or measures to stop them from accessing guns?
Governor Noem's comments that you just played there were well received at the NRA convention, I would say. Even, and the former president, Donald Trump, was there. I think her speech was better received than his. Freedom's last line of defense. Imagine that. If you believe that something is truly freedom's last line of defense, there's no room to negotiate removing something that's freedom's last line of defense. I would say, since Catherine's story that we saw just before this segment, there is, in principle, an understanding between 10 Senate Democrats and 10 Senate Republicans to bring to the floor some legislation on gun control. It does not include raising the age to buy a weapon. It includes some measures to make schools more secure, because these school shootings are the things that really seem to animate Americans and American politicians. We often have workplace shootings in America. We have many shootings in America, but it's these school shootings that seem to galvanize attention. So this proposed legislation includes making schools stronger, strengthening mental health provisions, and this might be some of the issues to try to better identify people who have documented mental health challenges from buying a weapon, and to encourage, to incentivize states, but not to make them, look at some of the loopholes that exist. For instance, presently, if there's evidence of domestic violence, it's called the boyfriend loophole. The abusers, alleged abusers in a domestic situation, are still allowed to own weapons, and in many cases, or in certainly in some cases, those weapons are used against the people who are there with them. Notably, the National Rifle Association has said that it does not issue a judgment on a framework for legislation, and will let us all know what they think of the legislation itself when that language is in place. But there is no minimizing, especially in a midterm election year, in which the out-of-power Republican Party looks to be in good shape to regain the House. There's no minimizing the influence of the National Rifle Association on this legislation and on candidates who might have an opinion on this legislation ahead of either their party primaries or Election Day in November.
Well, Scott, the National Rifle Association, or the NRA, the gun lobby group, appears to be very powerful, to the extent that critics say it has hijacked the entire legislative process to ensure that there are sensible gun laws to prevent mentally ill people from accessing guns, or to prevent people from buying military-style weapons that, you know, people who usually go hunting do not necessarily need, and that they use those guns to hunt human beings instead of going to hunt for game, perhaps. Your thoughts?
We should say that gun owners in the United States are not a monolithic group. There are groups of gun owners who share many of the same opinions of the National Rifle Association, but have broken away from that group in recent years because of concern about some organizational problems that the group has had. There are also groups of gun owners who feel, while they want to protect their right to go hunting and to use their guns, at a gun range, do oppose things such as high-capacity magazines or the sale of rapid-fire assault weapons. That said, the National Rifle Association remains the largest, most influential, and wealthiest gun lobby group in the United States. And their convention in Houston, in the same state as the Uvalde shooting, in that same week, there was no room in any of the speeches or the people who I spoke to in Houston for these measures. And let me explain that it, again, freedom's last line of defense. I think that line from Governor Noem is illustrative, because even if you're a gun owner who does not have a high capacity magazine, the position of the NRA is that you may not need that high capacity magazine, but agreeing to any legislation that restricts any rights of any gun owners is a fundamental threat to you owning a gun. That it's a it's just the starting point. Later in her speech, Governor Noem said that opponents of gun rights ascribe to the views of Marx and Lenin and are in the long run, and it may take 100 years, but they are patient and they will try to wear us down and take our guns. That is, when you speak in terms like that, you don't hear Marx and Lenin spoken about much in political demagoguery in the United States anymore. That shows that any negotiation, including this one that's ongoing in the Senate, will be difficult, and that language the legislative language will be chosen carefully. And I think notably, what we understand from this legislation that will be brought to the floor, for instance, it does not include increasing the age to buy a gun from 18 to 21. It is true in the United States that you may not drink alcohol until you are 21, but you may buy a rapid-fire assault weapon at 18.
Well, Scott, what do you think are the prospects of these discussions about gun control in the Senate succeeding? I ask this because there are two underlying factors when it comes to gun control: mental health and guns. However, critics say that the Republicans are unwilling to even talk about gun control, but will quickly talk about mental health. Why wouldn't both sides come into some form of an agreement to see how to move the process forward?
Judging from what we understand about the nature of this agreement that appears to be in the Senate, there may be some progress on mental health. That is something that gun owners spoke about after the Uvalde shooting, that to make it harder for the Uvalde shooter to have obtained his weapon would make it difficult for anyone to obtain that weapon. And that's something that is non-negotiable for gun owners. But gun owners who see themselves as being responsible custodians of that Second Amendment right would certainly make the point that if there is someone who has mental health challenges, that is something that could be looked at. So this effort in the Senate to incentivize states to look at the red flag laws, which is using in background checks institutional evidence of mental health issues, there could be some progress on that. Again, it depends on the language of the legislation and what the NRA says about the language of that legislation. But I cannot imagine in this election year any real legislation coming from Congress that would address the guns themselves.
Well, Scott, I was speaking with some Africans from different parts of the continent, and they said with over 60%, a majority of Americans advocating or being of the view that there has to be some gun control measure. Why has it been so difficult that America seems helpless about implementing sensible gun control measures that will be, you know, fair to everybody else to prevent such mass shootings from occurring? Because this is not going to go away. We might be able to see an unfortunate incident like this again, because this year there have been over 50 mass shootings, as I understand, and previously there have been more. So where do we draw the line, Scott?
I think that it's apparent that this will happen again in workplace settings and in schools, unfortunately, because the foundational, and I think we saw this in the beginning of this segment, that the primacy of the Second Amendment and the feeling that my ability to own a weapon is not simply my personal right, although it certainly is, but that it is almost my patriotic duty to own a gun because, again, to quote Governor Noem, gun ownership being freedom's last defense. We had also seen in some of our reporting from our White House colleague Anita Powell that there are Republican primary challengers who may be able to use this legislation to run against, because the way the United States is organized, there are great rights held by individual states. States have the ability to control many things, including reproductive health and many social issues that one might think might be held by the federal government. In many Republican-led states, especially here in the American West, almost all the little existing legislation that might have happened before has been rolled back. That you need a permit to conceal to carry a concealed weapon. No, you can just carry your gun pretty much wherever you want. We have gotten to a point where there are so few restrictions on gun ownership that if there is some legislation in Congress, this would be something that Republican candidates could run against, further weakening, I think, the prospect of any real legislation. Because as we know in politics, wherever the country is, if you have a challenge from within your party for that party's nomination, that usually comes from the right if you're a conservative, or the left if you're a progressive. And so that weakens your ability to come to the middle, as these 10 Republican senators and 10 Democratic senators have in this agreement. No better illustrated, and I think it's notable, that four of those Republican senators who have agreed to this proposal are not running for re-election.
Mm. Now, Scott, usually when there are mass shootings, there are suggestions that perhaps the teachers, particularly when it comes to shooting in schools, that the teacher should be trained to have guns in order to repel such attacks. How is this suggestion being taken on the ground, particularly in Uvalde and probably in the West, in the Midwest where you are?
This was the remedy, I think, that was at the center of the National Rifle Association remarks by the former president, Donald Trump. It is, as you say, an issue that comes up after we have every school shooting. There are teachers who are gun owners who say that if only I had had my weapon in my desk drawer, I could have saved my class. You can imagine instances where that might have been the case. Generally, that proposal has been opposed by most teacher unions who believe that that's not, you know, where is that weapon kept in the classroom, for instance? How is that weapon kept safely? How is it ensured that only the teacher would have access to that weapon and that a student might not gain access to that weapon, either accidentally or intentionally? The one thing that people seem to be coming behind it, and may very well be included in this Senate compromise in talking about strengthening schools, is some physical strengthening of security. Senator Ted Cruz for instance, spoke about whether there should only be one door into a school. And then we can control that. And other people said, well, obviously, if there's a fire in a school of 1,000 children, you have to get people out of a building more quickly than you would through one door. The arming of teachers, I think we're a long way from that, because teachers and parents share the concern that having more weapons in a school creates the vulnerability for either accidental discharge of that weapon or intentional discharge of that weapon by someone who did not themselves bring that weapon into the classroom. I don't imagine that we will see that in the new term, and I certainly do not understand that that is part of the present legislation in the Senate. More guns, certainly in the schools, outside the presence of armed guards, and many American schools do have armed guards, that is probably the extent of more guns in schools.
Well, Scott, Wayne LaPierre from the National Rifle Association is on record to have said that the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Some experts have criticized him for saying so, saying that it will really worsen the security situation in parts of the country where mass shootings usually occur. But what are you hearing on the ground about a good guy having a gun to stop a bad guy having a gun?
That is a neat phrase that many of the speakers, and actually many of the NRA members who I spoke to outside the convention hall in Houston, echoed. I guess the question there is, who's a good guy? Who decides who is that good guy? If that good guy has some record of domestic abuse, is he still a good guy? If that guy's 18 and not 21, is he still a good guy? If you're a good guy with a weapon, then would you withstand a mental health background check? It's all the defining the bad guy. Well, that's pretty easy. Defining who is the good guy, who are the good guys who should have these weapons. I think that sentiment, for instance, that teachers should have guns in a classroom is following that same idea that teachers, being good people and responsible for the classroom, if only they had a handgun in their top drawer and could engage an assailant who came into their classroom with an automatic weapon, that is the same sentiment. But opinions about what constitutes the good guy with a gun, that's not something you can legislate.
Mm. Scott, with the ongoing discussions in the Senate, should Americans be hopeful that at least there appears to be movement in crafting a gun control measure that could help save lives?
There is movement. What happens to that movement, I think we will see in the next week when the language of this legislation becomes clear and when the National Rifle Association says whether it will support this language or not. There are many things in what we understand is the framework for this legislation that fall short of what President Biden outlined in his comments after the Uvalde shooting. It does not return to the assault weapons ban. It does not address high-capacity magazines. There are many things left out of that. But again, a half measure in some situations is better than no measure. And if, as we understand, this legislation addresses school security, addresses some mental health provisions, and incentivizes states to adopt some of these red flag laws that link gun ownership with mental health records, then that would be progress. But again, that's incentivizing states. And as I said, states have great power in the United States to regulate things like gun ownership. And you will see any of that irregularly adopted. I don't imagine that in South Dakota, Governor Noem, who we saw in that clip, who's gone to great lengths. One of the first things that she did on taking power was have a state house signing ceremony revoking the few gun restrictions that still existed in South Dakota. I don't imagine that many of the Republican governors here in the West will be incentivized to make any of those changes at the state level. It is a defining element for many politicians. This is, it's not just owning something. It's a culture that you have grown up with, that your parents and your grandparents, you've gone hunting, your gun cabinet is in your living room. It's a fundamental part of your identity. And politicians, someone who comes and tells you that they want to change that, it's threatening.
Well, Scott, let me talk to you about, you mentioned NRA support. Why is the NRA support, or lack thereof, with regards to the ongoing discussion to have a gun control measure in the Senate so critical?
It is one of the most important lobby groups in the United States. You know, that you have different, as there are in many countries, you have different lobbyists who lobby on different issues. So part of it is just the institutional strength of the NRA. But if they were the candy lobby, for instance, people wouldn't be as animated about how much sugar there should be in candy. Gun ownership, the Second Amendment, that defining principle, freedom's last line of defense. It's an issue that is fundamental to many people's identity and the sense of defending the Constitution, and that it is your patriotic duty for many gun owners. That combination makes the NRA an unassailable lobby, and they're regular. They give politicians and candidates gun scores where they'll say, okay, you're 100% for the NRA and you're only 80% for the NRA. And we have seen, especially in races here in the American West, when the NRA comes out and says you're a good person, that helps you. Mm. And when the NRA comes out and says you are not a good person and you are a threat to gun ownership, that resonates with many voters. The politicians only respond to power that is real, and the power of the NRA is real.
Now, Scott, I need your insight on this, because I've heard some lawyers and experts say that the amendment talked about a well-regulated militia, and that these people who are arming themselves do not necessarily belong to a militia, and that the amendment itself is not a blanket statement or blanket amendment in the Constitution that allows people to buy helicopter gunships and tanks for warfare, among other military equipment people are buying. What are your thoughts on that?
So, yes, there is much talk about how the Second Amendment should be interpreted more than 200 years after it was written, and you have to look at the environment that it was written. But Second Amendment proponents would say, tend not to look at the regulated militia part of it, because you're right, we have the National Guard, we have proper regulated state militias in the United States, but that's not what this is addressing. It is that right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And, you know, it's not just a law, it is in the Constitution. So that provision is, you know, we certainly here in the United States can amend that Constitution, but we have not amended anything in those principle Bill of Rights, especially something like the Second Amendment. And you heard there from Governor Noem and from many people at the NRA that those threats to gun ownership exist and are real, and that the feeling that people who want to talk about limiting that gun ownership, for instance, there's a suggestion that gun owners be mandated to have their guns, when they keep them in their homes, locked in a you know, many people have gun safes, but other people just have gun cabinets that are glass doors, either with a small lock or not locked. And there is some suggestion that that as a nation, we regulate how those guns are kept. Gun owners and the NRA immediately reject that proposal as being a constitutional abridgment, because if you are there to defend yourself and freedom, and the government can tell you how you're meant to keep your guns safe, locked up, that will limit the time, the ability for you to have that gun when you need it, either to stop an intruder in your home or sort of more systemically to defend freedom, however you might see that those freedoms threatened.
Well, Scott, I've heard critics say that there are laws that prevent guns from being carried into federal buildings, into airports, and in some cases into schools. Why can't there be laws that will limit the ability of people to access high-capacity magazine weapons that inflict damage on individuals rather than, you know, going hunting, for example?
So that's something that President Biden referenced in his remarks when he spoke to the nation the evening of the Uvalde shooting. Again, talking about these rapid-fire assault weapons, that hunters don't need a rapid-fire assault weapon to go after deer. Again, the issue here among gun owners is it's a slippery slope. Even if you don't own a high-capacity or a rapid-fire assault weapon, and you have no interest in owning a rapid-fire assault weapon, it is the view of the NRA that you should be opposed to any legislation that would restrict the sale of that, because once you let them, however you define them, restrict your ability to own a rapid-fire assault weapon, the next thing is they're coming for you, for your single-shot rifle that may not be part of this legislation, that it is a slippery slope, and that the only way to ensure the unabridged ownership of firearms in the United States is to oppose all efforts to regulate any of those weapons.
So, Scott, with Governor Noem's statement and the pro-gun activist and enthusiast, do they want the status quo to remain as it is now with constant mass shootings? Don't they want anything to be done to save lives?
As we heard in your spot from Nigeria, politicians will always give their thoughts and prayers for the victims of mass shootings that followed in Uvalde. There was a brief moment of silence at the NRA convention about that. The former president, Donald Trump, read out the names of the victims from Robb Elementary, and everyone at the convention was saying, you know, terrible loss of life, but deranged gunmen, that the person who carried out this attack isn't like regular American gun owners. He had a mental health issue, and that should be addressed. There certainly was some talk at the NRA convention about mental health, but the guns themselves, the analogy is, and I think you've heard this from members of Congress, we did not ban the use of airplanes after September 11th. So it's not the thing, it's the mind of the person using the thing. And in the minds of most American gun owners, they are good people. They are the good people with the guns, to go back to the euphemism that you had before, and that they're there to protect their neighbors and their own selves, either against criminality or government interference.
Well, Scott, when you spoke to the survivors and family of people in Uvalde, what were their hopes? What were their hopes of some form of a gun control measure coming out of the Senate? Because the House of Reps have, you know, come up with a lot of measures that die in the Senate. What is going to be different this time?
Those moments in Uvalde were still so raw that I don't believe that people had sort of codified what they would hope for. Certainly people, you heard from something has to be done. But what does that something look like is probably different for everyone. There was some shouting down of the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, who was in Uvalde for the days following the shooting. There were people who said he should have done more. He, again, like everyone, expressed his condolences to the families and wrote to the Texas legislature to examine these points about how to make schools safer. But none of those points included either age restrictions or type of restrictions on weapons. So I think in the present political environment, what might happen, and again, there's no guarantee that the Senate compromise will even see the floor, will likely focus on mental health and school security, but will not address the types of weapons that Americans can purchase in the United States. It appears we have not yet gotten to that point. And again, especially in a midterm election year where the Republican Party is feeling pretty good about recapturing the House and maybe taking control of the Senate, it's unlikely that they would give too great a political gift to President Biden.
Well, before we go, Scott, your overall observation when you went to speak with people in Uvalde?
Shock. Not that there's been another school shooting, because that is not that uncommon now in the United States, but that it had happened there. You know, that was meant to be the last week of classes. And you know what it's like at the end of the school term. You're saying goodbye to classmates. You're thinking about the summer. You're saying goodbye to teachers. You're cleaning out. It's a optimistic time. The school year's over. Who doesn't love when the school year is over? And instead, those classrooms where children should have been getting ready for the summer were places where grief counselors were meeting with surviving children, parents, and staff from Robb Elementary and from other schools in the school district. So, again, shock in Uvalde, and what that will happen, whether that plays in how that plays in Texas politics. It would seem that Governor Abbott is well on his way to reelection. So there will be no effect in Texas statewide.
Thank you very much, Scott Stearns, for your report. And that wraps up our show today. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to connect with Straight Talk Africa on social media. Send us a tweet or write a comment on Facebook and tell us what you think about the topics we are covering. I'm Peter Clote in for Haiti Adams. Good evening, Africa. We'll be right back.